أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم، والصلاة والسلام على خير المرسلين وعلى آله وأصحابه أجمعين، ولا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم. سبحانك اللهم لا علم لنا إلا ما علمتنا إنك أنت العليم الحكيم. السلام عليكم، welcome back to, we're now in class 18 in fact of the Risala. So getting through, but we're still in prayer. And last week I think it was Thursday last week, we were talking about joining prayers. Today we move on to the next section in this large chapter, a long chapter that deals with various issues relating to the prayer. And that relates to people who are exempt from praying, or the circumstances which renders a person exempt from having to do the prayer. So he says, وَالْمُغْمَى عَلَيْهِ لَا يَقْضِي مَا خَرَجَ وَقْتُهُ فِي إِغْمَائِهِ. Somebody who is in a state who was in a state of unconsciousness, whether in a coma, whether a long faint, whether he was very, very ill and overcome by the illness, not just sleep. Sleep does not have the same ruling. It has to be a level beyond sleep, which is unconsciousness. If they are unconscious in the time of a prayer, and by the time of the prayer, we mean the end of the time of the prayer here, a time of the prayer in which they haven't prayed that prayer, and then they come to the end of the time of that prayer, and there's still enough time for them to pray part of that prayer, or at least one rakat, and then they fall unconscious, they do not have to make up that prayer. So he says here, وَيَقْضِي مَا أَفَاقَ فِي وَقْتِهِ. Oh, by the way, they add to this, aside from being unconscious, being mad, if you're in a state of legal madness, insanity, throughout a prayer time or in a prayer time, even if this lasts for years, if you're in a coma for 10 years and you missed 10 years worth of prayers, you don't have to make any of them up. And they mention the same thing for being drunk, but not drunk when you deliberately drink alcohol, but drunk when you do it by mistake. Because drunkenness is considered to be an extra level on top of sleep. So if, for example, you drink something thinking that it is something halal for you, thinking it's grape juice or whatever it is, and actually it turns out to have been alcohol, and you become drunk, so you're not really aware of what you're doing, and then you miss the prayer time because it lasts throughout a prayer time, you wouldn't have to make that one up. Or if you drink milk and the milk's gone off, or something else, can you ask people to... So yes, so whatever you are in a state of unconsciousness throughout a class, throughout a prayer time, you don't have to make up that prayer time. He says here, وَمَا وَيَقْضِي مَا أَفَاقَ فِي وَقْتِهِ مِمَّا يُدْرِكُ مِنْهُ رَكْعَةً فَأَكْثَر مِنَ الصَّلَوَاتِ. So now we have a situation, you have been unconscious, and then you come to. Your unconsciousness breaks, your coma breaks, your spate of madness breaks, and you come back to your senses. And you come back to your senses at the end of a prayer time. Such that were you to do wudu and get dressed, you would still have time to pray a rakat of that prayer. But maybe you don't do so even so because you're still quite weak, but you had enough time to do it, then you make up that prayer. That prayer is one that then you were commanded to have prayed. So you have to make it up. Best yet, you pray that prayer in its time once you've come to out of your coma. But if you come to, but you are still sort of slept for a bit after that and you weren't able to, you have to make up that prayer. Is that clear? وَكَذَلِكَ حائض تطهر. The same applies to a woman who's in a state of menstrual bleeding. So if he says here, let's just go through what he says here because it makes it quite clear. Basically, she has the same status as somebody who is unconscious with respect to prayers. Not with respect to fasting, though. She does have to make up fasts. فَإِذَا بَقِيَ مِنَ النَّهَارِ بَعْدَ تُهْرِهَا بِغَيْرِ تَوَانٍ خمس ركعات صلت الظهر والعصر. So if her period ends and she were then to do her ghusl in the normal way that she does a ghusl, without being really super quick and rushing through it in order to catch the prayer, and without being really, really slow in the way that she does it, and measured in order to, she doesn't have to pray the prayers. So rushing to make sure she gets the prayers or being really slow so she doesn't have to break the prayers. No, you don't consider the speed that she actually does it. You consider her normal speed or normal, ordinary speed for somebody to do a ghusl. If after that, she would have had the time to pray five rak'ats in the daytime, then that means that she's caught both dhuhr and asr. So her period ends. She has the time to do a ghusl and pray five rak'ats in the day before Maghrib comes. Or she actually does the ghusl and still has time to pray five rak'ats before Maghrib comes. That means that both dhuhr and asr are obligatory on her because she caught the time of both. She caught the time of one rak'at of dhuhr and the full four rak'ats of asr, basically. Because the time of dhuhr ends, the daruri time of dhuhr, ends four rak'ats before maghrib, the time that it takes to pray asr. That's the end of the time of the daruri time of dhuhr. So she had a full rak'at she could complete before that, which meant she caught the time of both prayers. وإن كان الباقي من الليل أربع ركعات صلت المغرب العشاء. And say her period ends in the night time, and after she has done her ghusl in the normal with the normal speed, she has time to pray four rakats before Fajr. Then that means she's caught both Maghrib and Isha. So if she doesn't pray them then and there, she has to make up those two prayers. Just like in the day, if she didn't pray the Dhuhr and Asr, she's still considered to be, have come up, you know, they've been prescribed for her because she was in a state of purity in their time. So she has to make them up and pray them. وَإِنْ كَانَ مِنَ النَّهَارِ أَوْ مِنَ اللَّيْلِ أَقَلَّ مِنْ ذَلِكِ صَلَّتِ الصَّلَاةِ الْأَخِيرَةِ. If in the daytime, there is less than five rakats, in other words, four rakats, there's only time left to pray four rakats after she does her ghusl and gets dressed and all those sort of things that you need to do in order to pray. There's only time to do four rakats. Then that means she's completely missed the time of dhuhr. So she was never required to do dhuhr. So the only prayer she has to do is asr. If there's four rakats or less time left. And similarly in the night, if there's three rakats or less time left, that means she completely missed the time of Maghrib. She only has time to pray the Isha. Because the time of Isha is four rakats. So the Maghrib would then have had to have been before that. Is that clear? وَإِنْ حَاضَتْ لِهَذَا التَّقْدِيرِ لَمْ تَقْدِ مَا حَاضَتْ فِي وَقْتِهِ. So now we come from the beginning of her period. So let's say she had been busy the entire day and she hadn't had a chance to pray either dhuhr or asr until right near the end of the time of dhuhr and asr, her period starts and still hasn't prayed them. Yeah, this is the scenario we are in now. So she hasn't prayed dhuhr and asr. It's coming up to Maghrib. And suddenly her period starts. Does she have to make up that dhuhr and asr after her period ends or not? That's the question we're coming up to now. Obviously, the Maghrib, she wouldn't have to because the time of Maghrib is after her period has started. Well, what about the dhuhr and the asr? Well, that's what he's answering now. So he says here, if her period starts and there is five rakats left of the time, left to pray, then she does not have to make up either prayer. She is considered to have been in her period with still time to pray those prayers when her period started. So those prayers fell within her period, and she doesn't have to make up any prayer that fell within her period. Is that clear? So if her period starts 5 rakats before Maghrib, and she hasn't prayed those 2 prayers yet, she's still in the time. She might have had a darura, a necessity for her delaying it. Even if she didn't, she's still in the time. So her period fell within those prayers times and prevented her from praying them. So she doesn't have to make them up. Neither Dhuhr or Asr. Both those prayers fall away from being obligatory on her. Is that clear? And similarly in the night, if her period starts 4 rakats before Fajr, then she's considered to have had time within her period to have prayed the 3 rakats for Maghrib and 1 rakat for Isha, thereby catching their time, which means that she doesn't have to make up those prayers because she was on her period when those prayers were in their time. Is that clear? You understand what I'm saying? وَإِنْ حَاضَدْ لِأَرْبَعَ رَكَعَاتْ مِنَ النَّهَارِ. But if her period starts 4 rakats or less before Maghrib, yeah, then she has to make up the first of the 2 prayers because the time of Dhuhr completely fell outside of her period and she simply just missed praying it. Whereas she's within the time of Asr when she's on her period, so she doesn't have to make up that prayer. But the time of Dhuhr fell outside of her period. And if a prayer falls outside of a person's period, there's no impediment to her having to pray it. So then that becomes a prayer that she has to make up once her period has ended, if it's 4 rakats or less. If it's less than 1 rakat, then she has to make up both prayers because she didn't have time to pray either of them. If it's less than 3 rakats, so that is, so if her period starts 4 rakats or less in the daytime, up to 1 rakat, in other words, less than 1 rakat, she has to make up both, or for 3 rakats of the night, up to 1 rakat, so 3 rakats or 2 rakats or 1 rakat in the night, then she has to make up the first of the prayers in the night. That meaning Maghrib. Is that clear? Because the time of Maghrib fell outside of her period. And when she was outside of her period, she is commanded to pray the prayer. When she's within her period, she's not commanded to pray the prayer. In fact, she's forbidden from praying the prayer. So any prayer that falls outside of her period, she has to make up. Any prayer that falls within her period, she doesn't. Even if it's only a bare minimum amount of the amount of time needed to pray that prayer, 1 rakat. وَاخْتُلِفَ فِي حَيْضِهَا لِأَرْبَعِ رَكَعَاتْ مِنَ اللَّيْلِ. There's a difference of opinion if her period starts 4 rakats before Fajr. Some people say if it starts 4 rakats before Fajr, she has to she has caught the time of both prayers. Some people says no, she's only caught the time of Isha within her period. And so some people say she doesn't have to pray Maghrib or Isha. Other people say she only has to make up Maghrib. So some people say she doesn't have to make up either in that situation because she caught the time of both. Her period started and there was still enough time to pray Maghrib and 1 rakat of Isha. But others say, no, the time of Isha is 4 rakats. So the time of Maghrib should finish 4 rakats before Isha, before Fajr. So there's that difference of opinion in that scenario. But if you're very precise and able to know exactly within the rak'ah, then you're better than most of us. To know the exact timing. It's not very difficult, not very easy to know the exact timing. It's best to always act on the side of precaution and pray the prayers if you think there is a chance that your period started too late and you missed them. فقيل مثل ذلك. It is said the same, in other words, the same as with three rak'ats, that she doesn't have to make up either, that she makes up only the first one. And it is said, إنها حاضت في وقتهما, that she has started her period with enough time to pray both of them, and she doesn't, therefore, does not have to make up either. So are there any questions about that section before I move on? That applies, as I said, with the reason he goes into all of the detail with menstruation is it's much more frequent with menstruation, much less frequent with madness or with unconsciousness for long periods of time. The important thing to remember here is that unconsciousness or a coma is not the same thing as sleep. It's not simply a deeper form of sleep. It has a different ruling to sleep. If you miss a year's worth of prayers because you sleep for a year, then you have to make up all of those prayers. Unless the doctor might say that it's simply called sleep, and in fact it's something that's actually a form of unconsciousness through illness, then that would be a different ruling. Then he says here, وَمَنْ أَيْقَنَ بِالْوُضُوءِ وَالشَّكَّ فِي الْحَدَثِ. So he now talks about wudu. So we're in a section relating to prayer, but obviously the most important thing that you have to put in place for prayer is purity. And so he has a few issues that he didn't discuss in wudu that he brings in now. So he says here, I think we talked a little bit about this, but this is the matter of doubt. If you are unsure whether you are in wudu or not, that's the issue he's talking about now. So he says here, if you know for a fact that you did wudu, you can remember it. You remember all of the motions, you remember the time you did it. But then he says here, shakka fil hadath, you're unsure whether you have since broken your wudu. And by unsure here, he means 50-50. Doesn't mean like you simply have some sort of waswas, some sort of whispering in your ear that, oh, you know, there's a small chance that maybe you broke it. No, it has to be you have no idea. Not where you have some sort of, you think, you know, 75%, 90% that you're in wudu, but there's some small chance in your head, some whispering that you might have broken it somewhere. That's not what we're talking about. He says here, if you know that you did wudu, but you're unsure whether you broke it since, you ibtada'a wudu, you start your wudu again. In other words, you do your wudu again. It's considered that your wudu is broken. Similarly, if you go to the other side of that, if you are sure that you broke your wudu, you can remember going to the toilet, but you're unsure whether you did wudu since. You think you might have done, but you don't know, then that's obviously the same ruling. The doubt here is exactly the same. And if this happens to you in the prayer, if you suddenly have a doubt in the prayer that whether you are in wudu or not, the general ruling in the prayer is that you keep going. You complete the prayer, then you re-examine the situation to see whether you're sure you broke it, or you know, you think back, or if your doubt was about something that happened to you in the prayer, you weren't sure whether you passed wind or not, and you don't hear any sound or smell any smell. Generally, in that situation, you ignore it. But if it turns out afterwards, when you look into it after the prayer, that you actually did break wudu, then obviously your prayer is invalid. But you stay until the end if it's only a doubt. If you know for a fact you've broken wudu, then you better leave it. You better leave the prayer immediately. وَمَنْ ذَكَرَ مِنْ وُضُوئِهِ شَيْئًا مِمَّا هُوَ فَرِيضَةٌ مِنْهُ فَإِنْ كَانَ بِالْقُرْبِ أَعَادَ ذَلِكَ وَمَا يَلِيهِ. So now we have another situation relating to wudu, and that's you did wudu, but then you think back to your wudu and you realize, oh my gosh, I missed out the face. Or, oh my gosh, I didn't wipe the head when I did wudu. These are the faridas. There's the four obligations of wudu that he's talking about here. The four principal elements are obviously wiping the head, washing the face, washing the arms, and washing the feet. If you remember doing wudu, but you then think back in the art, you are sure that you missed out one of the elements of it. You know for a fact that you didn't wash your face. Say, come later and you realize, oh, there's no water that's touched my face at all. He says here, what do you do? He says here, if you're still close to the wudu, your limbs haven't dried out, you've maybe just gone from the thing, entered the mosque, there's still like water on you from the wudu, and then you realize, oh my gosh, I missed out that part of my wudu. Then he says, you go back, you do that thing that you missed out, and you do everything that comes after it in your wudu. That's the way you rectify it. You don't have to start your wudu again. Say it was your right foot that you missed, then you go back, you wash your right foot, wash your left foot, done. Your wudu is fine. Or say you forgot to wipe your head, you go back, you wipe your head, then you do the return wipe of the sunnah, because it's a sunnah. The reason why you go back and do the things after it is because you're still basically within the wudu. So it's a sunnah when you're doing wudu to maintain the order of wudu. That's a sunnah element to it. If you don't do the things after it, your wudu would still be valid, but you've missed out one of the sunnah elements of it. And it's a recommendation that you maintain the order between the sunnah elements, or the order between the fard and the sunnah elements. In other words, that you do the ears after the head rather than the ears before the head. That's mandub. Yeah. So you do everything afterwards. You go back, you do the thing you missed and all the bits that come after it. If you washed it three times the first time, you only wash it once the second. If you wash it once the second, you can wash it two more times to bring it up to three. But you make sure that you do that and then the bits that come after it. وَإِن تَطَاوَلَ ذَلِكَ عَادَ فَقَدْ. If a long time has passed, such that your limbs have dried out, say you've done wudu, then you've gone and done some other task, and then you think, oh my gosh, I missed out my head from wudu. He says here, you make it right now simply by going and wiping the head alone. That's it. That rectifies your wudu. You only have to do that one part, nothing else. And that makes your wudu correct. Yeah? So if a long time has passed, you just do the element. If a short time has passed, you do the thing that you missed out and the bits that come after it. وَإِن تَعَمَّدَ ذَلِكَ. But if you miss out a part of your wudu deliberately, and a long time has passed, your wudu is invalid. Because they are the things upon which wudu hinges. It's not wudu. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala tells us the things that upon which wudu hinges in the Quran. يا أيها الذين آمنوا إذا قمتم إلى الصلاة فاغسلوا وجوهكم وأيديكم إلى المرافق وامسحوا برؤوسكم وأرجلكم إلى الكعبين. Those four things, that you have to wash your face, your arms to the elbows, wipe your head, and wash your feet. If you don't do one of those things, you haven't done wudu. So if a long time has passed, you've missed the opportunity to make it right. If you deliberately leave it out, you haven't got wudu. So you have to do the wudu again. If a short time has passed, you're basically still within the period of time where you can rectify the wudu, because you're within the fawr, the immediacy. So you can still make it right. Because the order, as I said, is a sunnah, it's not a fard. And if you miss out a sunnah, in other words, you do all of the wudu, then you do everything, and then you do your face last, deliberately, your wudu will still be valid. If you leave out sunnahs from wudu, your wudu is still valid. Although you have done something terrible. But if you leave out sunnahs deliberately from the prayer, and they are three or more sunnahs, your prayer is invalid. That's the difference, because the Prophet ﷺ said, "Sallu kama ra'aytumuni usalli." Pray as you saw me pray. And we know exactly how the Messenger of Allah ﷺ prayed. Whereas with wudu, we are told that we have to do wudu as Allah commanded us. And the command of Allah specifically only mentions those four things. Even the rest of it is part of the sunnah of the Rasul ﷺ. So there's considered to be an extra emphasis placed on the sunnah in the prayer as opposed to the sunnah in wudu. But that doesn't mean you're free to simply leave out the sunnah. But
so if you forget to wipe the head and then you've dried a small amount of time passes, you just have to go and wipe your head again?
Well, it depends what you mean by how much time's passed. Let's say 5 minutes have passed. You go back, you wipe the head, and then you do everything after it. Let's say 20 minutes has passed. You go back and wipe the head, and your wudu is all right.
But it's not charged for how wet it is.
No, it depends. It's how long it takes. It's defined a short period of time, how long it takes an ordinary sized limb to dry in moderate temperature. I mean, it's a difficult thing. I mean, you'd say probably somewhere in the region of 5 to 10 minutes. maybe 15 minutes, something, a maximum of that period. He said, وَإِنْ تَعَمَّدَ ذَلِكَ ابْتَدَأَ الْوُضُوءُ إِنْ طَالَ ذَلِكَ. If you do that deliberately, you do the wudu again if a long time has passed. As I said, if a short time has passed, you can still make it right, even if you did it deliberately. وَإِنْ كَانَ قَدْ صَلَّى فِي جَمِيعِ ذَلِكَ. If you prayed with that wudu, that deficient wudu, he says here, in all of these cases that we mentioned above, أَعَادَ صَلَاتَهُ أَبَدًا وَوُضُوءَهُ. You have to do your prayer again. Your prayer is invalid. Abadan, you have to always do that prayer again. That prayer was not valid because you didn't have wudu. And you do the wudu again. Again, now this is referring to when you do it deliberately. Obviously, if it was forgetfulness, you can make your wudu right simply by doing the limb itself that you missed out, even if you've prayed. But the prayer is invalid. But you can make your wudu right simply by wiping your head or washing your face, if it was through forgetfulness. But if you did it deliberately, your wudu is invalid and you have to do the wudu again. Is that clear? وَإِنْ ذَكَرَ مِثْلَ الْمَضْمَضَ وَالْإِسْتِنْشَاقِ وَمَسْحَ الْأُذْنَيْنِ. If you remember something which is a sunnah, like washing out the mouth or blowing water out of the nose or wiping the ears, فَإِنْ كَانَ قَرِيبًا فَعَلَ ذَلِكَ وَلَمْ يَعُدْ مَا بَعْدَهُ. If there is, if only a small amount of time has passed, in other words, you're still within what we might consider to be the doing of wudu, 10 minutes maybe or something like that. Then he says here, you do the thing you missed, the washing of the mouth on its own, and you don't do any of the things that come after it. So you still make an effort to rectify the missed out sunnahs if you forget them. So you come to the end and you realize that you haven't washed your mouth, then you just add the washing of your mouth at the end and your wudu is done. وَإِنْ تَطَاوَلَ فَعَلَ ذَلِكَ لِمَا يُسْتَقْبَلْ. If a long time has passed and you remember, oh my gosh, when I did wudu, I didn't wipe my ears, then he says here, then for future prayers that you're going to use that wudu for, or future things you're going to use that wudu for, you wipe your ears, you go back and you wipe your ears to make sure that your wudu is complete and perfected as much as possible for the future. But if you did any prayers with it, you do not repeat them. وَلَمْ يُعِدْ مَا صَلَّى قَبْلَ أَنْ يَفْعَلَ ذَلِكَ. So, in other words, your wudu was valid, albeit incomplete. Yeah? So it's a recommendation then that you do this. It's not even at the level of a sunnah, but it's something which is to bring extra perfection to your wudu. Because as I said, the order of sunnahs is mandub, but you still should have them. But having them out of order is not that big an issue. So you just do the sunnah on its own. وَمَنْ صَلَّى عَلَى مَوْضِعٍ طَاهِرٍ مِنْ حَصِيرٍ وَبِمَوْضِعٍ آخَرٍ مِنْهُ نَجَاسَةٌ فَلَا شَيْءَ عَلَيْهِ. If you pray on something like a hasir, which is like a mat, like a reed mat, or a carpet or something like that, and the place upon which you pray is pure, is clean, but the edges of that carpet have run through the dirt and got, you know, horse dung and stuff like that on them, and so they're impure, then there's no harm done. As long as you're not touching those impure areas, it's fine. Because when we talk about the place upon which you pray, we mean the place that your limbs come into contact with the ground, the seven points of your body, the two, your feet, your knees, your hands, and your head. Those are the places that you have to make sure there's no impurity on them in terms of when we talk about the place being pure. If there's impurity around that, but you're able to make sure when you pray that none of your body touches impurity, then it's fine, even if your clothes touch it. So long as your clothes do not soak up some of that impurity and become impure themselves, because you're not allowed to carry impurity on your clothes. But if it's dry and your clothes brush against some piece of impurity on the ground while you're praying, there's not going to break your prayer unless they lift it up. But if your hands or your head or your knees or your feet are on impurity or touch impurity, then that is where you are praying on somewhere impure and you have to make up your prayer. It's the same as having impurity on your body. والمريض إذا كان على فراش نجس. So let's take another example where there's likely to be impurity. Somebody who's sick in bed, and you know, when people are in bed, sometimes you know their bodily fluids will come out onto the bed, you know, like they might vomit or you know, they might urinate on the bed, so there'll be impurity on the bed, and they're too weak to move from the bed. So the place where they are on is impure, the covers. He says here, if somebody is on covers that are impure, a bed that's impure, he's lying down on a place that's impure. If he's lying down on a bed that's impure, there's no harm in him getting a cloth, as long as he's not wearing that cloth, a thick cloth or a carpet or a prayer rug, laying it on top of that bed or that top of that covers and praying on top of that, as long as it's not, you know, overly soft, as if he's planning to do the full prayers. But I mean, if he can't do it apart from being in that place, and he has to pray lying down, for example, or sitting down, then he can put something down on top of it, sit on that thing, and do his prayer sitting down on that thing, even though the rest of it underneath that is impure. So long as it's thick and the impurity will not soak through it, so it comes through the other side. فَلَا بَأْسَ أَنْ يَبْسُطَ عَلَيْهِ ثَوْبًا طَاهِرًا. There's no harm in him laying over it a pure garment, kathif, that is thick, and then praying on that garment. This applies generally. If you're in a place where there's a lot of impurity and you have something that you can place down on top of it, then you can pray on top of that thing. So long as you're not coming into contact with it, you're safe. So now we've talked about somebody who is sick. You might wonder, having talked about, you know, this sick person on his bed, how he prays. He now goes into this topic of the way that somebody who is sick does the prayer. So he says, "Salat al-mariḍ illam yaqdur al-qiyam salla jalisan." And by somebody sick here, he doesn't just mean somebody who has what we conventionally call an illness. It could be somebody who has had an accident. It could be somebody who has been born with a condition. Somebody who is weak for some other reason, through old age, maybe. In all of these situations, it's the same thing. He has the same ruling as somebody who is sick. If he cannot stand, or standing causes him distress and pain, then the next thing he does, if he can't stand unaided, is to try and stand being held by somebody or leaning against something, if that's possible for him. If he can't do that, then he sits. And there's two ways of sitting here. There's sitting unaided and sitting, again, leaning, or with somebody helping hold you up. These are the various different possibilities here. The one he mentions here is sitting unaided. If you're unable to stand, and in any way, even aided, then you sit. And the best way to sit here, he says, is mutarabbi'an, which is cross-legged, as many of you are sitting. This is the way that the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam prayed when he prayed from a sitting position, cross-legged. So you sit cross-legged for the purpose of your qiyam, the places where you're standing. But when you actually do the sittings in the prayer, if you are able to, you sit in the way that you should sit in the prayer that we've mentioned before. That we, in the description of the prayer that we talked about, when with one leg crossed under the other and one foot upright, that's the way you should try and sit in the sittings of the prayer if you can. If you struggle to sit like that, cross-legged, then you can sit in any other way that's possible for you, including leaning. So for example, that might include sitting in a chair because you're being supported by the chair. If that's the way you need to do in order to pray, then that's the way you pray. If you're able to stand but simply not able to do the positions, then even if you're going to have to sit down for a lot of the prayer, because maybe you haven't got the energy to stand for a long time, you should stand for the bits of the prayer that you can. At the very least, stand for the Takbiratul Ihram. And then stand as much of the prayer that you can for the Qira'ah of the Fatiha, for example. It's an obligation to stand for that and so on. You should try to do it as much as possible. Then obviously you sit for the other bits if your energy gives out. This person we're talking about here is somebody who is not able to stand at all. It's very, very, very difficult for him to stand. He does the whole thing from sitting, including the Takbiratul Ihram and everything. But a lot of people, you see them walking around, and then they come and, because they're weaker or older, they pray sitting down. They should begin their prayer with the Takbiratul Ihram standing and then sit down. So he says here, Salla jalisan, he prays sitting down, in qadara alat tarabbu. If he's able, he does it cross-legged. Wa illa, but if he's not able, fa bi qadri taqatihi, according to however he's able, whatever he's able to do. Wa illam yaqdir ala sujood, if he's, so now we've reached the point somebody is able to sit, but then there's a different question about whether they can do sajda and the other positions. So even if you're praying sitting, maybe you can still do sajda and you can still move around a little bit in the prayer. You do those. If you're not able to do sajda, then you indicate or you gesture, you use your body to gesture in the direction of the ground by leaning forward. Maybe with your hands to indicate towards the ground. And he says here, we've just been back. He says, well, if you're not able to do sajda, falyumit bil ruku'i wa sujood, you move your body as a gesture for ruku' and for sajda. Wa yakunu sujooduhu akhfadu min ruku'i. And you go deeper in your sajdas than you do in your ruku'. Basically, you almost do the same motion, but you just go further for the sajda than you do for the ruku'. Although with the ruku', you might put your hands on your knees. Whereas for the sajda, you might have your hands floating above the ground. But you try and go deeper when you do the indication for sajda. That's if you're able to move your back. Maybe you're paralyzed, you can only move your head. Again, you wouldn't bend your head more for the sajda than for the ruku'. Wa illam yaqdir salla ala jambihi al-ayman. If he's not even able to sit down, then he prays lying down. And the best way to do that is to lie on your side, your right-hand side, facing the Qibla. So your body is perpendicular to the Qibla. Your face, it's the same way that we bury somebody, on their right-hand side with their face facing in the direction of the Qibla when they're in the lahd. Yeah? And in fact, the next one is the same way you bury somebody when the ground doesn't allow you to bury somebody like that, which is on your back with your feet facing the Qibla. So the first thing you do, obviously, is you pray on your, if you can, you lie on your right-hand side, face the Qibla. Then if you can't do that, you lie on your left-hand side, facing the Qibla, which he doesn't mention here. Then if you can't do that, you lie on your back with your feet facing the Qibla, because that way your head is looking towards the Qibla. And if you can't do that, then you lie on your stomach with your head facing the Qibla. That's the only way you can lie down to do the prayer. وَلَا يُؤَخِّرُ الصَّلَاةَ إِذَا كَانَ فِي عَقْلِهِ. If a person is compos mentis, he's not unconscious, or so delirious with pain that he's not aware of what's going on. If he's compos mentis, then he should not delay the prayer. He should say, the times of the prayer apply to everybody, whether they're well or unwell. so long as they are in possession of their minds. They're not unconscious, they're not mad, or anything like that. You still endeavor to pray the prayer in the time. I mentioned before with the joining that if a person is very weak, that they only feel that they're able to get up and pray once, they try and do Jama' Suri, where you pray one prayer at the end of its time and the other prayer at the beginning of its time. Because you only have one time slot, so you join in that way. But you still make sure you pray the prayers in their time. You don't delay the prayers out of the time. And this la yu'akhir, according to the shuruh, also means that it is not grounds for you to not do the prayer at all. In other words, the prayer is still an obligation on you if you are sick, unless you are unconscious. Just being in a lot of pain, but the sort of pain that hasn't made you completely lose your intellect completely, is not enough grounds for you to not have to do the prayer. If you're unable to pray at that time, you still have to make it up. It is an obligation on you. And as I said, it makes it as easy for you as possible. You can just use your eyes to pray, if that's the only way you can pray. You can even just think the prayer, making an intention for each motion in your head. But of course, you have to be in wudu, or you have to be in a state of purity. So he comes to that next. Well, yasalli, he says here, well, yusalliha biqadri ma yuthiq. He prays it in any way that he can. Anyway, as I said, even if it's simply almost in his mind's eye, in a sense, because he can't move any other part of his body. وإن لم يقدر على مس الماء لضرر به أو لأنه لا يجد. If he can't use water because of the pain that he's in, or because of the harm that water is going to cause him, or the delay in his recovery as a result of doing wudu, any of those reasons. أو لأنه لا يجد من يناوله. Or he can use it, but he can't find somebody to bring him the water for him to do. He's not well enough to go and actually fetch the water himself. He needs somebody to bring him water, but there's nobody around to bring him the water for him to do wudu. He could sit up on the side of his bed and do wudu, but he can't get access to the water. If that's the case, then he does tayammum, he says here. So if a person's sick, they should try and endeavor to have something next to them with which they can do tayammum. He says here, فَإِن لَمْ يَجِدْ مَنْ يُنَاوِلُهُ تُرَابًا. If he doesn't find anybody to bring him earth or stones or anything like that, so he's got nothing available to do tayammum, he says here, تَيَمَّمَ بِالْحَائِطِ إِلَى جَانِبِهِ. He does tayammum on the wall next to him. إِن كَانَ طِينًا. If it is made of clay. أَوْ عَلَيْهِ تِينٌ. Or has an overlay of clay. In other words, by clay here, we mean sun-baked, not one that's been put into an oven in order to bake it. If it's simply been put on and then it's dried in the natural environment, some sort of clay or something of that nature, something natural from the earth, mud brick, yeah? Then you can do tayammum on that. But in kana alayhi jis, if there is gypsum, or jeer, or lime, or plaster, or paint, or anything like that on the wall, he says here, فَلَا يَتَيَمَّمَ بِهِ. He cannot do tayammum on it. So then what do you do? The prayer time has come in. Nobody's there to bring you any water to do wudu, or you can't use water. And you don't have any stones with you to do tayammum. The only walls around you are painted. Then on the ground, there's carpet. In your bed, it's simply made of wood. What do you do? We talked about this in one of the earlier classes. But there's four positions in the madhab. But the mashhur of the madhab is you are not required to pray, and you're not required to make it up, because you could not meet the conditions of the prayer at all while you were in his time. So basically, almost in a sense, the preconditions for it becoming obligatory on you could not be met. So it was not an obligation on you. That's one of the positions. The other position is that you pray without wudu and you make it up. Or you pray without wudu and you don't make it up. Or you don't pray, but you do make it up when you have wudu. والمسافر يأخذه الوقت في طين خضخض لا يجد أين يصلي. If a person is traveling and the terrain that they are traveling through is very, very difficult. It's like marshland, like wet sort of ground that's sort of, you know, muddy water everywhere. So they're basically trudging through muddy water. And they can't find anywhere to get down and actually do the prayer. They're basically putting their face in the water, in the muddy water when they try and pray. Or thick or thin mud that basically you have a chance of almost drowning when you put your face into it. He's saying, what do you do here? He says, فَلْيَنْزِلْ عَنْ دَابَّتِهِ. So you're riding on your horse or your camel or donkey or whatever, and you're in this terrain. What do you do? He says here, the first thing you should do is, the first option, you get off your horse and you do the prayer standing up. وَيُصَلِّي فِيهِ قَائِمًا. You face the Qibla. You do the entire prayer standing up, instead, but you don't go into sajda. You would go into ruku', and then you go into a sort of almost a deeper ruku' for your sajdas without putting your head anywhere near the ground. And for your sitting, you'd be standing up, and you would do your tashahud and stuff standing up. And that would be your prayer. If you can't put your head on the ground or sit on the ground because of the conditions. Not simply when the conditions might make your clothes a bit wet or make your clothes a bit dirty. That's not, unless making your clothes wet will make you ill. And from experience, there's a very good chance of that. If it's simply you're worried about your clothes getting a bit dirty, that doesn't count. You still have to do the prayer on the ground in that case. That's the only reason that's stopping you. But here we're talking about a sort of thickish, sludgy mud that if you put your face into it, there's a chance that, you know, you could do harm to yourself or even almost semi-drown. That's what we're talking about, this type of ground here. يُؤْمِئُ بِسُجُودِ أَخْفَضْ مِنَ الرُّقُوعِ. You indicate with your body, you bend down with your body for sajda, slightly deeper than you do for ruku'. فَإِنْ لَمْ يَقْدِرْ أَنْ يَنْزِلْ. If the ground is so bad, the terrain is so bad, that you can't even get off your horse, or it might even be that, you know, you're in a very dangerous area that getting off your horse could put you in danger from people. I mean, there are situations in war where you can pray on the back of your horse, because getting down will put you in danger. Then he says here, صَلَّى عَلَى دَابَّتِهِ إِلَى الْقِبْلَةِ. You stop your horse, face it in the direction of the Qibla, and then do your prayer. Allahu Akbar. You don't put your head on the horse's back though when you're doing sajdas, because you're not using now the horse as a platform upon which to pray. You're still effectively praying on the ground. You just can't get onto the ground. So rather than thinking you're praying on the horse per se, where you do your sajdas on the horse's back, no, you still just gesture for your sajdas towards the ground. Obviously, we don't do much horse riding these days. But, you know, on a lot of these things, like with trains and things, you can almost do the thing fully properly, because it's not quite the same as a horse in a sense. It's almost attached to the ground. It's almost just like on a platform in a sense, isn't it? It's not a living creature between you and the ground.
A car is comparable in situation.
Somewhat. Yeah, you would do it because a car is small. You would gesture for the sajdas in the same way. But they sometimes have the holders where you can do the full prayers if you can when you're on the back of an animal, and there's space to do the prayers with all of these things. You do it. So I mean, if there's space, then you do it. If there isn't, you don't. So he says here, where are we? وَلِلْمُسَافِرْ أَنْ يَتَنَفَّلَ عَدَى دَابَتِهِ فِي سَفَرِهِ حَيْثَمَا تَوَجَّهَتْ بِهِ. If you are traveling, you're on your back of your horse, you're driving in your car, you're on the train, whatever it might be, and you want to do a nafile prayer, or you want to do your witr or duha, or whatever it is, any non-obligatory prayer, you don't have to even face in the direction of the qibla. Whichever direction your car is going, your train is going, your animal is going, you can pray in that direction for the purpose of a non-obligatory prayer. This is not the same as for the fard one, where you have to always make sure you face the qibla. So he says here, in kana safaran taqsaru bihi salat. But this is on condition that the journey you are on is one that's long enough to shorten the prayer. If it's not, then you can't do that. And it's a journey that is a halal journey, a lawful journey, not one that you are forbidden from doing. I think I mentioned last time that if you made the journey with the intention of going to a place that you know is great to do highway robbery, or you're traveling to a city with the purpose of meeting a woman who you're planning to do unlawful things with, who you are not married to, then that would not be a journey that you'd be allowed to do this on, this type of prayer. Well, yutir ala dabatihi insha, and he can do the witr prayer on his horse, on horseback, if he wants. Wala yusalli al-fariḍah, but he must not pray a fard prayer. In other words, only in those conditions that we mentioned before can you pray a fard prayer on a horseback. Otherwise, no. It's not something you should be doing. Wa in kana maridan, even if you're sick, that's not grounds for you to be praying fard prayers on horseback. Illa bil ard. So the only place that you should pray fard prayers is on the ground, except in those very limited circumstances that we talked about. Yeah. Illa bil ard. He says here that he reminds us of those circumstances. Illa an yakuna in nazala salla jalisan ima'an li maradih. So this is now talking about a slightly different one, actually. If you're sick and you're on the back of a horse, you have to pray on the ground, except, he says here, if you were to go on the ground, you'd simply pray in the same way that you're praying on the back of the horse, sitting down. In other words, basically, with the prayer, you have to pray the prayer as fully as you can. That's the fard prayers. If you're able to do all of the movements and all of the positions, then you do them. If you're not able to do them, you do them to the best of your ability. For example, if you're not able to go fully into ruku' because you're very inflexible and you're not able to get a straight back when you go into ruku', then you do it as much as you can. Then, if you're even not able to do that, then you go to the other positions where you simply gesture. If you're not able to stand, you sit. If you're not able to sit, you lie down. If you're all of these things, you just do it to the maximum amount that you are able to do. That's the way it is with the prayer. As I said, it goes all the way down to simply doing it in your head. So if you're on the back of a horse, you can't pray any fard prayers, even if you're sick, unless you're a sick person. And were you to get off your horse, you would simply pray in the same way that you're praying on the back of the horse, that is, sitting down, doing gestures for the sajda and the ruku'. فليصلي على الدابة بعد أن توقف له. You will pray on the back of your horse after you have made, after it has stopped for you. ويستقبل بها القبلة, and you have faced it in the direction of the Qibla. Same as we talked about before for the dodgy terrain. Yeah, the next bit's quite a long bit. Talking about nosebleeds, so we'll finish there. Are there any questions about any of this?
Yes, sir. So, if you're sick or ill, is there a level of pain that is better for you to endure to fulfill the prayer in its best capacity?
It depends if it's bearable or not, or if something is going to put you off the prayer because you're torturing yourself, basically. Also, is it going to make your condition worse or delay your recovery? Because sometimes pain is your body telling you something. You're pushing your body somewhere where maybe it shouldn't be pushed. So it depends on the nature of the pain. Depends from your prior experience, maybe from medical thing. If you can do it and it's bearable for you, and but if it's something that's going to distract you as well from the prayer, again, that's another consideration. If you're praying, but all you're thinking about is your pain, then that's not a condition to be praying in. Any other questions before we finish?
Assalamu
Walaikum salam.
alaikum. Is it okay to ask a question about yesterday's class?
You mean last week's?
Sorry. I have a sleep. I was trying to not take
No
sizes.
problem.
Something like that. The question I asked last week about the Maghrib, sorry, the Dhuhr and Asr, when you're journeying, when you're coming back, like if I'm coming back to my hometown and I hold off Maghrib until Isha time and get back and pray it in my hometown, that's okay too?
Well, I mean, it depends whether you had an opportunity to stop and pray Maghrib in its own time. If you do have an opportunity to do that, or you leave after Maghrib, then you pray your Maghrib first and then don't delay it. If it's impossible for you to stop until the end of the shared time, that is in the time of Isha, then that's grounds for you to delay the Maghrib. But I mean, we're talking Jadda Sayr is our condition here, which means that you basically don't have the opportunity to stop. You're in a rush. Maybe it's a time constraint.
If you stop and eat and stuff,
Yeah, go on.
if you stop to eat on the journey, you definitely have to pray, correct?
Well, I mean, if there is a possibility of praying in that place as well, I mean, sometimes you stop in a place where there is no opportunity to do the prayer in that place as well. Maybe it's to do with fitna. Maybe it's to do with being scared of people. Who don't like Muslims and things like that. But people sometimes have various different reasons, or maybe the place to do wudu is really disgusting, or you can't find somewhere that you think is pure in order to pray. In those sort of circumstances, people might delay. And now, I mean, it's better to do the prayer then in its time if you are brave enough to do it.
Inshallah.
Yeah.
You, Sheikh.
You're welcome. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين الرحمن الرحيم مالك يوم الدين إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين اهدنا الصراط المستقيم صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين اللهم صل على سيدنا محمد عبدك ورسولك النبي الأمي وعلى آله وصحبه وسلم تسليما سبحان ربك رب العزة ما يصفون وسلام على المرسلين والحمد لله رب العالمين So see you on Wednesday إن شاء الله Either at the same time or possibly an hour later, but the time will be sent out when the link is sent out. Assalamu alaikum.